This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, and this is a treat for me. I was out for a little bit, so I didn't get to hang out with Mike Palm, the mayor. Of course, VP of Operations, Circa, the D, Golden Gate. You can find Mike Palm on Twitter, at Mike Palm Circa, as we welcome you back. We had him on the phone last week. That's not good enough. Oh. He's live there at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. And you brought bearing gifts. You brought some gifts today, one for Amal Shaw and one. Oh. Why don't you go ahead and show us what you were. Let's see. What do you got?
This is my gift to me from Michael Lombardi on his book, Football Done Right. Originally, FDR, I heard. He was writing a book on FDR. I was curious about the comparisons to Eleanor and Hillary. It's about the history of football, though. And Michael signed it. I know your copies are probably on the way. I just got mine quicker through the Circa mail. Excited the band is back together. Not since this man, Michael Lombardi, put us together on Saturday and Sunday mornings at the South Point has this group been together. And, you know, all kudos to first touchdown scorer Stephanie Kamerschak. Frenier made me wait in the corner by the poker table for 5 minutes till I could come on. And those fond memories. Stop me when I'm lying. Stop me when I'm lying. Okay.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Amal, I got the giggles. Holy moly. Amal. You also got a present from Mr. Palm. You've had issues getting into Taj Garage Mahal. And would you like to show what
Mike just gave me a long overdue keep card, which would have been beneficial instead of having to, you know, tell them who I am and to go through a 5-minute waiting process. I felt like I was going through a TSA without pre or clear.
Dustin, you know from working with me, so there's a couple of times when I've lost it, and for some reason that made me lose it. Anywho, I'll try to pull myself together here. Woo! Okay. The big news today, not sure if you care, but Dame Lillard is going to be a Buck, Mr. Palm.
Exciting news. All right, next.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know if the boys, Mr. Benson and the crew behind the book there at Circa were making any adjustments, but let's move on from that. What would you do if you're Mr. Salah? That is what Michael Lombardi calls him. What would you do if you're the head coach of the Jets? He is going to play Wilson, but there is potentially a fractured locker room there with Wilson continuing to get the start, hosting the Chiefs with the Chiefs laying 10.
Yeah, he's losing the locker room. Now they bring in Simeon, and why Simeon? I mean, I guess because he played for the Jets before, and there's some familiarity with him. I know Colin Kaepernick wants to be on the practice squad and be available, and there's probably a blacklisting there where he can't get a job. But, I mean, Wilson is awful. He's even worse than Fields, if you can believe that. He's even worse than Fields. I mean, look at Arizona. Arizona is 3-0 in the first halves. Could easily be 2-1 with Josh Dobbs. I mean, to tell me.
3-0.
Competent quarterback play. I mean, if they could get any of it, they've got a top 6 or 7 defense in the league.
I don't disagree with you on Fields. The only thing I would say is, guys, when was the last time the Chicago Bears developed a quarterback? I think it's an organizational failure. When you look back on this team and how many guys. Mitchell Trubisky failed. Is Trubisky as bad as he was in Chicago? I probably not. But they have just continuously failed the inability to develop offensive line, players in the perimeter. I mean, what the hell do they do there? I don't think they care about spending money because you know what? Everybody in Chicago has Bears season tickets and they're not going anywhere. On the off chance, once every 38 years they get back to another Super Bowl, you don't want to miss out.
You know, I saw my buddy. He was ranking the previous, like, over the last 10 to 12 years, the Chicago Bears head coaches. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, you've had Tressman. You've had Lovie Smith, who's obviously at the top there. You've now got Eberflus. You had Matt Nagy. It's not exactly Hallis and Belichick, right, boys? It's not been a great run.
Well, they go for the hot coordinator, and that doesn't necessarily translate into a head coach at all. I mean, you took a guy who had a bend-but-don't-break defense in Indianapolis. That wasn't a dominant defense in Indianapolis. They gave up a lot of yards, but they created a few turnovers, and you brought him in like he was a defensive guru. And then you draft a young quarterback, and I don't know who you have working with him. So It's a tough situation there. I know this. The race to the last winless team is an interesting one. All four teams play each other this week, with the road teams being favored, which is I don't know how you draw up either of those numbers, really, but it's tough to back a team off of giving up 70 to Miami and yet look at the dysfunction in Chicago. But still, 3.5 on the road, that seems strange to me.
Yeah, you know, when you look at these teams right now, the Broncos and the Bears, the Vikings playing the Carolina Panthers, to me, guys, I just didn't understand, and we talked about this during the summer. I don't know where you come out on this, Mike, but I didn't understand the affinity for the Denver Broncos. People were talking about this defense like it was the old Orange Crush. I didn't know if they had Rulon Jones and Carl Mecklenburg back there and Randy Gradishar. I don't know what the hell was going on. I mean, these guys can't play. They gave up 30-plus points to the Commanders. Then they give up a 70 spot to the Miami Dolphins, who, by the way, they should have kicked a field goal. Actually, what they should have done, they should have gone into the hurry-up offense and tried to get to 80.
They could have had the record with the field goal.
I know they should have.
I think they had the all-time yardage record or since they kept those stats. But they thought more of the offense. They thought that, you know, that Peyton could come in and fix Wilson and that this team could be competitive. And, you know, they were still plus $2 to make the playoffs. So it wasn't as if they were projected 5 wins above their total from last year like the Bears were. I mean, who drew these conclusions? Horrible offensive line, can't pass protect. Horrible defensive line, can't get to the quarterback. And as you said in the national championship game, I mean, he threw the ball 20 yards into Glendale against Alabama. We knew at that point he could never have any touch or accuracy, and we thought they were going to win 5 more games than they did last year. Among the last 9 games last year, they only scored more than 7 points in the second half once. They weren't close, but now we're going to win 5 more games than last year.
They're just
Steve Atwater. That was my guy. I was just thinking about that
Mr.
team
Razorback.
While you guys were talking about. Like, that was Elway, I want to ask you this, Paul, because I never had this conversation. And then you answered, like, in my during my lifetime, just the best that I've seen is Elway. Like, you can take the championships. You can take whatever you want. Like, give me a big spot. Give me a quarterback. I need someone. I'll take Elway.
You're going Joe Cool?
No, I would go Montana. Yeah.
I'm going to side with Patrick on this. So I'll give you a distinction. The best passer I've ever seen is Dan Marino. In terms of throwing the football, the best quarterback is still number 7 out of Stanford. I just don't.
Who wins nothing if they don't have the zone blocking scheme in Terrell Davis, whose career goes down as a big goose egg.
Well, let me ask you
I'm making the point. Amal Shaw, you have preached the gospel of it only matters if you're a champion, and everyone else is a loser. So if he doesn't have the migraine Terrell Davis, he wins nothing until the end of his career.
I don't disagree with you, but it helps when you got Jerry Rice, Dwight Clark, Roger Craig, and John Taylor lining up on that same side of the field as opposed to Ricky Nateel, Vance Johnson, and the rest of the stiffs. And who the hell was the running back? I can't even remember now for Denver.
What was the fallout and the carnage there? What's the scuttlebutt behind the book at Circa with Survivor?
Well, let's put it in perspective because we're getting all this Sunday, Bloody Sunday, and we can't believe that 73% of the field has been eliminated. Let's go all the way back to 2022, which would be last year, when after 3 weeks, 75% of the field was eliminated, Patrick. And then we had for the next 7 weeks last year, what I call the era of tranquility, comparing it to that time period from 1812 when Napoleon was defeated, up until you could argue 1860 when they had that skirmish about, you know, economic policy called the Civil War. That was the era of tranquility in the United States, okay, because the powers in Europe were sort of set in place and they could focus on domestic issues. Watch now, there'll be a run to Thanksgiving here where very few people will be eliminated. I mean, everybody's going to be on San Francisco this week.
Yeah, I would think so. I think it's a great spot for the 49ers, Patrick. We talked about it. Let's see if Arizona can steal one more. I mean, you know what shocked me, guys? And we could talk about it now. The people that put the Dallas Cowboys in play on Sunday, why the hell would you have taken the Cowboys in that spot on the road when, if you're going to burn the Cowboys who are playing on Thanksgiving, might as well have just taken the Kansas City Chiefs?
So that's a great point. And I, on Friday, speaking to Michael Lombardi, he has the Fridays off. He goes on Pat McAfee. So Mike Pritchard and myself and Femi, we have a three-man weave. We do the Friday football panel. And Pritch asked me, he said, I think this week there's a lot of bombs out there. I want to use the Chiefs, Mike. But what do you think about Christmas? I said, I'd save the Eagles for Christmas before the Chiefs. Use the Chiefs this week. And he did. But now remember, exactly half the field used the Chiefs to get through. So they now have to save Philadelphia for Christmas.
Do you guys know of skilled survivor? Like, is there somebody that you respect when discussing survivor, Mike Palm? Have you, as far as strategy?
I actually respect them all, and I was bad timing because he was in on Jacksonville, but he had one entry, right? So he didn't spread out enough, in my opinion. It's all depending on what you want to do and the investment you want to make. I think Amal, who sticks to his guns on things, is very good. And you don't play division games. You don't play road teams. You go all into a certain point. I mean, if you would have had one or six, you were still doing the same thing, right?
Correct. I would have used all six entries. But, Patrick, we talked about this last week. I think you guys would have been on Seattle, and I would have been on Seattle had Bryce Young been playing as opposed to Andy Dalton. Yeah. Andy Dalton was fantastic. I would not have thought that if the Carolina Panthers scored 20-plus points, they're going to lose the game and give up that much from an offensive standpoint. And remember, they had the lead at halftime. You know, Mike, the one thing I saw, the elevation of C.J. Stroud's confidence in the second half against Indianapolis, and it carried over to the game in Jacksonville. And, guys, I think you might see that on Sunday when they take on the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I advocated during the week – sorry, Patrick. I advocated during the week, take a harder look at Miami. People weren't really – I think 200-and-some people played Miami. Just because – you know, there was a stretch in that game for like 18 minutes in Denver. The Commanders outscored them 32-3. I mean, that told you what you needed to know about Denver. And they lost two games at home as 3.5-point favorites and now had to go to Miami. So I tried. I also said Jacksonville was the other option, though. That's the two I would have looked at. And I'm not trying to be a Wednesday afternoon quarterback, but I thought more people would have looked at Miami there.
Mike Palm, and he is part of the reason when I go home to Michigan, Circa has become synonymous with sports lines. I'm serious. Well, like when I go home to, like, the only thing my friends want to talk about is stadium swim, the setup at Circa, what's the Circa line? It's unbelievable, and Palm has a lot to do with it. He's going to stick around with us. The era of good feelings. Shout to James Monroe.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, if you're looking to become a better bettor, well, of course you are. Tens of thousands of people have already tuned to Juice Reel. That's Juice R-E-E-L in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, gives you the analytical edge backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors in all 50 states. You can use the data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool. It's Juice Reel. That's juice like orange juice. Reel, R-E-E-L. It's absolutely free to download, iPhone or Android. Juice Reel. Become a better sports bettor. The mayor is here. Of course, Sharp Money. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Mike Palm on a Wednesday. It's great to see him. I always, when I think of the mayor, there is a great picture. Maybe we can find it before the segment ends. Of Mike Palm in all his glory. You guys will probably know what I'm talking about. Where he's got his hands up like this, and he's just got an angelic smile on his face. Maybe it was when Circa opened. Dustin, you might be able to find. It's really, do you know what I'm talking about, Palm?
Yeah, it was from opening night of Circa when George Shea introduced me, and I walked
and
down.
You're like and this.
Then, yeah, I went like that to the crowd. Yeah, and
yes.
It was
and you're
done.
Looking off in the distance. Yes.
People have done different, what do you call this, filters of it, where it's like a sketch and all. It is a terrific picture. Then there's a picture when my daughter was born, and she had her hands up when she was like 8 days old like this, and people drew the comparisons as they cashed another 8-1 Quinella at Sigma Derby.
And, of course, it's always good to get the boys and the partners back together. Fond reflections from the year you two spent together doing the show, Mr. Shaw?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, listen, Mike's a big hockey guy. I'm a big hockey guy, big baseball guy. We'd go through a lot of games. I'll tell you one thing for me personally. I learned a lot about futures betting. I can tell you right now, would have never been on Blake Snell at 35-1 had Mike and I not done the show. We would get into a lot of those types of smaller bets and some of the things in the futures market that I think sometimes gets ignored. And one thing that I've noticed, Patrick, in the futures markets, there's a lot of overreactions from the bookmakers. It's like they're running scared out there. It's Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. And it's unbelievable to me how quickly they adjust and overreact on certain teams.
I have to tell you, Patrick, I think Amal will share this sentiment, but I think we were both more successful bettors during the year and a half we did that show because either Amal would talk me off of a side I was on, or I would talk Amal off of a side he was on. Sometimes we'd be in conflict. We'd put, you know, send our plays in. We hadn't made the bets yet unless they were soccer and they were starting early in the day. But to sit there and talk through it with another guy that was actually betting money on the game, I miss it. I miss it a lot. It was never work. It was always fun. And some people are fondly recalling it now this week on the VSiN fan page on Facebook.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah. And if you two were enjoying the conversation, imagine others were as well. And as VP of operations, not just at the D Circle Golden Gate, was it hard for you to drive down there and do a show daily?
No, it wasn't hard because it was scheduled at 11 o'clock around my time frame, which on Mondays and Tuesdays, I came in to do the show. Tuesday, I stayed for a couple extra hours. Monday, I didn't. The problem was, you know, with the and people ask, well, what happened to the show? What happened to the show? You know, VSiN went away from the one-hour shows, and they went to the 2 and 3 hour shows. I couldn't do two. I can't do 2 hours, not because I can't find 2 hours, but the prep to do 2 hours compared to one is much different. And just the amount of prep time that I would need in the evenings before and my other job duties and having three little kids, it's not feasible for me to try to do a two-hour show 5 days a week, let alone a three-hour show like you guys are doing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Curious what you guys picked up. So USC's traveling to Colorado, and it's 21.5. Mike, correct me if I'm wrong there at Circa, but I've got pretty much 21.5 everywhere. Takeaways from both Oregon and Colorado off of last week's butt-whooping from the Ducks, and then USC laying 21.5 on the road here, Mike.
How can you lay 21.5 on the road? They couldn't cover that against Arizona State. That's barely a Division I team. Colorado's better than Arizona State. Arizona State is god-awful. That's why I faded Oklahoma State against South Alabama the next week. That's an awful team. That directional school from Utah should have beat them in the sandstorm that first week.
Was that Southern Utah?
Whatever it was, they caught a fourth and eight. I mean, they outplayed them the whole game. Colorado's better. They're playing at home. I could only take the points here because Alex Grinch is going to give up 21 to anybody that puts pads on.
I would agree with him there. The one thing that, to me, is going to limit and hinder USC is the defense and Alex Grinch. I call him the Grinch who stole defense. I mean, this guy's teams, they never deliver on the defensive side of the ball, and that's where their shortcoming is. I don't know if you saw that ASU game, guys, but to me, you watch and you go, wow, Arizona State's in a football game with Drew Pine, who had no confidence in terms of throwing the football, and they were still right there. And one other thing, I didn't understand Lincoln Riley's arrogance. They're up by six. They've got fourth down and three and about a 26-yard field goal. He decides to go for it. And I understand being, you know, a risk taker in certain situations where you go for it. Why would you not go up two scores against a team like Arizona State? Why put them in a situation where theoretically they get a stop and then one play could give them the lead? I'm not allowing a team like Arizona State to even mentally think they've got a chance to hang around.
Arizona State is terrible. Big guy, were you talking about that 73.5 on the total with USC and Colorado earlier?
Yeah, potential. I mean, it's so hard to figure this one out.
That's a tough total because it's a 10 a.m. local kick.
Yeah, it's a big number. And I was on under in Oregon, Colorado, which I felt very good about. Maybe this is when you look at the first half because Colorado's at home. Maybe they can score a little bit because USC's defense is horrible. USC probably won't have a drive where they don't score in the first half and you go over the total in the first. But I think it's going to end up being a stay away from me.
But by the way, one other thing real quick. You mentioned the 10 a.m. start in Boulder. No college football fan should ever, ever criticize any player ever again for leaving early to take the money. What do you think these two schools are doing playing at 10 a.m. and 9 o'clock on the West Coast? This is ridiculous. This is just a straight money grab from Fox. Stop complaining when a kid wants to go be a millionaire just because your job sucks and you're not making that much money. Stop hating on other people.
Okay. Speaking of hating on other people, did you see what Saban? Saban was taking shots at Lane. So he was talking about he's laying 14.5 at Mississippi State. And, Palm, here's what he had to say. Quote, "This is actually a bigger challenge for us than the last two games, in my opinion, in terms of this team being very physical, very aggressive on defense. Feels like a veiled shot at Lane after the Alabama win last week against Ole Miss."
Well, it's not really that veiled. I mean, it's a total shot at him. But Lane started it all with all his comments and who's calling defensive plays and all that nonsense and then went out there and laid a total egg against Alabama.
Yes.
So maybe they should focus a little more on game prep than on trying to put chinks in St. Nick's armor.
Real quick question for all three of you. Who's winning the SEC West?
I think we got an LSU. What's the LSU price right now?
LSU would be my play. I bet them to win the title with the hedge opportunity later. Their only loss is Florida State. That's it. And Florida State just beat Clemson.
Well, Dabo Sweeney beat Clemson. All right, let's. This was one of the worst weekends for coaching at the college level and at pro level I can ever remember how bad the coaching was this weekend. It's tough. LSU's got a lot of talent. It's tough to back a team that really doesn't have any quarterback play. I mean, this isn't Ricky Foggy in Minnesota. It's not. I mean, it's a different era of college football. So it's tough when a kid really can't throw the ball or create any offense. What's the price on LSU?
I'm looking up the prices right now. I just got the conference. I'm going to find the division.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going with a Roll Tide.
I also bet them as well, 50-1 to win the national title, all because I think the SEC, while it's down this year, one, Georgia's more susceptible than years past. I can hedge in the SEC title game on either of those tickets on those two SEC West teams, Alabama and LSU, at massive prices based on the talent that they have on the roster. I love that situation. And I just think the SEC is not going to get shut out of the college football playoff.
Yeah, they took down the division prices over at DraftKings. They don't have it right now. What was your take there with Clemson and Florida State? Then I want to ask you about Notre Dame, of course, losing at home with 10 men on the field to Ohio State.
Well, I mean, that was one of my losers in the contest this week was Clemson. And I was all set to play Florida State and lay three until they went to Chestnut Hill and couldn't get the Mighty Eagles off the field in the fourth quarter. And I said, this is the wrong side here. They're not used to playing in this big of a spot, going to Death Valley. And I took Clemson in the contest. I reversed my position and took Clemson in the contest. You know, Clemson led that game really basically wire to wire. He's got the ball down there, first down on the 12-yard line with 3 minutes to go. I mean, and you miss a field goal. It's just really poorly executed by Dabo down the stretch. I still think Florida State's they could come out of the ACC. Are they one of the best four teams in the country? I don't think so. But they can still come out of the ACC undefeated and make the college football playoff. Well, I really feel bad for Tim Murray. I mean, who traveled to South Bend. I mean, you have to decide early on in your life that you're going to claim a school you're never going to go to. And then to go there and hold Ohio State down like they did, lead in the second half. I don't understand when you make the stop on fourth down at the 11, why you just – they're running the ball against Ohio State. Why try to throw that screen? They got behind it. It was silly. And then the great Guru Freeman, you know, had 10 men on the field, two consecutive. Take the penalty. Take it off sides and get the 11th. You don't have a down lineman. I was going to title this, if I was on Follow the Money tomorrow, Shake Down the Blunder. This was going to be number one. Thank you, Patrick.
Tim Murray is very happy with the heartfelt apology from you. Sure, Mike Palm, you're the best. At Mike Palm Circa on Twitter. Check him out on Fridays on the Lombardi Line. Soon to find him on McAfee as well.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, our buddy Mike Randall coming up with about six plays. But first, the worlds are colliding here at VSIN. The show competition, $1,000 voucher for a Circa Sportsbook Super Bowl future on the line. Help us out. 40% off the football package. What does that include? Freaking everything, including the college football, pro football betting guides, the hockey guide coming out, the NBA guide coming out. Use the code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P, and that helps us. 40% off for you, helps us for the $1,000 voucher. VSIN.com/subscribe. We got you back here. I'm Al Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Coming up in 15 minutes, our NBA senior analyst Jonathan Von Tobel will join us. The big news today, of course, Dame Lillard headed from Portland to Milwaukee to team up with Giannis. Right now, it's our buddy Mike Randall, FTN Network Chief Content Officer. Make sure you check out FTN for all your gambling and fantasy information. I've got a bunch of friends that signed up after last week, and they swear by it. Mike joins us. Of course, Mike's in the tri-state. So why don't we start with the drama with the Jets? I'm sure you've heard potentially dissension within that locker room while sticking with Wilson. What's the latest with the quarterback there with the Jets?
Yeah, there's a lot of anger that's boiling over here in the tri-state area. The Jets feel they have a Super Bowl caliber team that needs a quarterback. They don't want to hear about Zach Wilson anymore. the players. There's infighting potentially against Salah's room. Bruce something meeting other day.
Let's go ahead and pull Mike down. We can call him up really quickly because I want to make sure he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's got close to 7 plays here, Amal Shaw.
Yeah,
I think we're having some connectivity issues, boys. Amal, you could jump in there if you can hear him. Go ahead.
I love what he said there. You know, look, there's dissension in the locker room, Patrick. You brought it up earlier. We talked about it. Salah's got to make a decision at some point in time. It's very hard, especially with the way they lost Rodgers, 4 plays into the season, and you have what you had last year with Zach Wilson. He steps in. You're hoping for some sort of improvement. You don't see it. And again, I revert back to the game against New England on Sunday. Horrific. Just a terrible, terrible performance. Nothing good to take away from Zach Wilson's performance that would, you know, just kind of elevate the confidence of this team. They've got two absolute dudes in second-year players in Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson. You've got to utilize these guys. Patrick, that defense cannot be on the field as much as they are. They had one drive that helped change the balance of power and time of possession at the end of the first half. Otherwise, New England was dominating them. Their first 5 drives, they had one first down, and they ran 18 plays.
Yeah, I think we're having an issue with Patrick as well, Amal. I think, look, when the initial situation happened with Zach Wilson, Amal,
yeah,
I think you had a very open-minded approach of, all right, there's no pressure on Zach Wilson.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was like, okay, now it's an opportunity for him where no one's expecting anything for him to exceed those low expectations, but it's just not happening. And so I guess, what do you do in the NFL in this situation for Robert Saleh, for Joe Douglas, who really, really for him, so much of his reputation's on the line, this opportunity's on the line. I don't think they can afford to not be good again, and that's why they went and got Aaron Rodgers. The roster isn't very much different than it was a year ago when Zach Wilson was at the helm, especially on the defensive side of the football. They had a few pieces on offense, but they were banking on it being the Aaron Rodgers show this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, to me, when you look at bringing in Rodgers, people could say whatever they want about him off the field, and that's fine, but he's still an incredibly talented guy, and he didn't have to be elite. He just had to be good and effective, which they weren't getting out of Zach Wilson. I mean, you think about some of the losses they had last year. Patriots, once again, a game that was dominated by their defense, and they still can't win a football game. In the National Football League, if your defense gives up 13 points, you should be winning every one of those football games. The defense gave up 13. There was a safety that got it to 15. But even if the number was 15, let's just say it was 17, whatever, that's a game you should be winning anytime you're holding anyone under 20.
Yeah, and I just think windows in the NFL are so few and far between, where so many organizations, and Jets fans know better than anyone of them all, like, you only have so many chances to be a contender and be a legit contender. And Aaron Rodgers was the piece to put you over the top. I just don't see the point in wasting everything else you did to get to where you are right now, to go into the season wanting to contend for a title, to just go, well, Aaron Rodgers went down on the 4th play of the year. If this happened week 5, week 6, week 7, different story. Happened week 1, 4th play, you lost Aaron Rodgers. There are ways to make up for that loss.
Well, they're 1-2. There's still enough time. Obviously, a tough matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs. Doesn't appear they'll be able to get a victory there. But if somehow they're even at 1-3, you still have time to make an acquisition. I don't think they need a great quarterback. I think they just need somebody who's serviceable, who doesn't turn the football over, can get you a couple of first downs from time to time, and put a drive or two together. This defense, in my opinion, is still elite. I know they didn't play well against Dallas. But again, part of it was the fact that Zach Wilson is the quarterback and they can't sustain drives. You could have the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens. If you're out there every 4th play, you're going to be fatigued. You're going to be tired.
Yeah, I don't put that on the defense. I put it on the offense. Let's bring Patrick back into the convo now.
Yeah, boys, I heard you talking about it, and great job, because if you think about it, this mirrors what happened in San Francisco. Like, yep. San Francisco completely botched the 2nd overall pick when they traded up for Trey Lance, and then they fell ass backwards into your boy Brock Purdy, Amal. Completely got lucky. We constantly talk about Kyle Shanahan and the brilliance and what he does with quarterbacks. Okay, Nick Mullins, he did nothing. He didn't win anything with Nick Mullins, who is a backup in the league. Yeah. They got lucky with Brock Purdy. Conversely, the Jets are sitting with your boy Timothy Boyle, and they're trying to figure out what to do when they botched the 2nd overall pick with Wilson by moving up. So that, to me, is really the story. Somebody said recently, if you trade for Cousins, what would that make the Jets? Okay, let me ask you another question, because so much is being discussed about Tua right now, and Tua's 380 to win the MVP. And a lot of it has to do, we know, with McDaniel's offense. Michael Lombardi's got a great tweet thread earlier today where he talked about, you know, Tua's playing well, but if you look at what McDaniels is doing and optimizing his skill set, a lot of it has to do with system. If you put Tua right now on the Jets, Amal Shaw, what does he make that team?
He drastically improves them. I think he puts them on a similar or comparable to level where Aaron Rodgers is. I know Tua's having a ton of success MVP level down in South Florida, but I think a lot of that's attributable to McDaniels having Tyreek Hill and also having Jalen Waddle, who didn't even play last week. So I'm not going to go crazy in terms of how he elevates them, but I think he puts them in a situation where you go, this is one of 3 to 4 teams now in the AFC that can win the conference.
I totally agree, and we can bring the big guy in for this. I think the Cousins move would be optimal, and here's why. Early in his career, Cousins had the turnover gene. And what a turnover gene, like genes generally you can't mutate, you can't change them. It's either you're a guy that throws picks or you don't. Somehow, inconceivably, Cousins turned into a guy that doesn't throw interceptions. Like if you look at his numbers, what does he have, 2 on the year? He's got 9 touchdowns, 2 picks this year. If you look at his numbers, he's just a guy that's kind of cleaned up the interceptions, which is rare. And in this offense with that great defense with the Jets, he would make the perfect quarterback right now.
He's a great fit for everything they need, a facilitator. Also for him statistically, right, if you want to give all this credit to Justin Jefferson, I think everyone agrees he's the best receiver in football. It's not like he's going to walk into an offense where he doesn't have weapons to get the ball to. There's plenty of guys. Garrett Wilson, number one, who will look awesome with Kirk Cousins at the helm under center. I think Cousins makes the most sense. The Viking season is toast. It is over. They're not doing anything. They might as well get something for him at this point. For the Jets, he is the highest upside play, and next year is next year. You don't have to worry about him. You can walk away.
I would agree with that. I think you can make the move. I'm looking at JJ's stats. This guy's unbelievable, right? 1,400 yards, 16, 18, 09.
Someone's got to get him that ball, though.
And he's got 458 already this year, averaging better than 17 yards a catch. Guys, I think if you're the Jets, you make the move. The Vikings sitting at 0-3. If they lose this weekend, they go to 0-4 against Carolina. May not lose that football game, but, man, does Minnesota say, hey, you know what, give us a first round or whatever the Jets have available to give? If I'm the New York Jets, I take that shot. If not, then you sit there and say, you know what, guys, we're sitting at 1-3. Do we tank and we try and go get Caleb Williams or Drake May because Aaron Rodgers is coming off an Achilles injury? We still have Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall.
The only reason Minnesota's not going to bail at 0-3 is because of that division.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, and you're also just letting a fan base that's going to pack that stadium, you're also letting them know that you're waving the white flag. By the way, you mentioned Jefferson. We were discussing, the three of us were discussing, I think it was yesterday, maybe it was on Monday, like the deepest position right now in the NFL, it has to be defensive front. Jalen Carter, what he's done on limited snaps, he's got more pressures than Aaron Donald. Like, he's going to be a freaking Hall of Famer. It's either defensive inside defensively or wide receiver. Because if you just look at Ohio State and the wide receivers they're producing, and then you look at Jefferson and you keep on going on down the line, those two positions, defensive front and wide receiver, right now the deepest in the league.
I would agree with you there. For me, I'm going to go with wide receiver. I mean, just real quickly, think about this in Philadelphia. You got two number ones, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown. Miami, you've got two number ones, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill. Justin Jefferson's in a class by himself. So is Devontae Adams. I think there's only two guys on that planet, and that's J.J. and Adams. And then you factor in, I didn't even mention Ja'Marr Chase yet, Chris Olave, two consecutive weeks just making plays. And by the way, can we not get Ohio State guys a damn quarterback in the league? Why do they have to play with these bags of dirt?
Do you guys agree with what Burke said, that really not much of a difference between Carr and Winston?
Yes, I do agree. No, I think Winston's got a bigger upside.
I think Winston still stinks. They're both mid, but Carr's definitely better.
We're not saying he's not
come
better.
Back. Randall with 6 picks. We'll get him back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, new bettors, here's what you're going to do. You're going to download the DraftKings app right now, and when you do and you use the promo code SHARP, you bet $5, you get $200 instantly in bonus bets. It's the best deal out there. Make sure you download DraftKings, get the app, use the promo code SHARP, and you're ready to go. Any NFL bet starting tomorrow night, obviously week 4 with the Lions at the Packers. Get involved. Use the code SHARP. $5 gets you 200. The crown is yours over at DraftKings. Okay, we got you back here. Sharp money. Great job, everybody behind the scenes getting us back. Amal Shaw, tremendous job. The big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. And we welcome in Mike Randall, who's been patient, and we appreciate that. Of course, FTN for everything betting and fantasy, at Randall Rant on Twitter. You've got, looks like, 7 bets, so I'm just going to get started, Mike. You're going to take the 2.5 with the Ravens at the Browns.
Yeah, I certainly am, guys. Lamar Jackson on the road as an underdog. I'm just 2 weeks out from a nice plus 160 money line cash at Cincinnati. 8-1 against the spread, Jackson, as a starting quarterback, as a road underdog. That has 4 outright wins in the last 5. We have John Harbaugh, or per Bet Labs, great as a division underdog of a touchdown or less. 12-6-1 against the spread, 8 outright wins. On the flip side, guys, how about Cleveland? Kevin Stefanski. He's going to lead a team that's 6-14 since 2003, 30% against the spread as a home favorite. Browns in an uncomfortable spot here, just 2-5 here under Stefanski. I know the Ravens defense is good. We know the Browns defense is good, but I want to see Deshaun continue with the efficiency. I have my doubts. Give me the Ravens plus 2.5.
And speaking, Mike, of the defense, the Browns haven't given up a red zone touchdown all year. Their defense, you look up and down advanced metrics, they're 1-1, 1-1, 2-1. They're great. And I say that because you're going to go under the 41 here, same game, Ravens-Browns.
Yeah, we're going under because the Browns defense is overshadowing the Ravens defense, which is 5th in DVOA per Aaron Schatz here at FTN. I'm worried about that efficiency. Yes, the Browns defense has been incredible. Steelers had the fumble recovery. They had the interception return. Only one touchdown here allowed through those 3 games. But the Ravens are going to be up to this task. These two teams are under this number in 4 of the last 6 matchups. Pace of play is huge here. Browns 4th slowest in pace of play per FTN. Ravens 10th slowest. Old school. Slobberknocker, Art Modell, the move. There's going to be a lot of animosity in this game. We will go under here. Give me the Ravens and an under 41 points. It's dropping quick.
Look at Randall bringing back Slobberknocker. Didn't know we needed it, but we do, okay? We do, Mike. Next up, this is one Amal and I have been discussing. We've been having fun with this number, and that is the Rams at the Colts. Of course, the Rams coming off that short week, Monday night loser, had every opportunity to win that game in Cincinnati, Mike. They head to the Colts. The Colts outside of one quarter could potentially be 3-0, which is wild. However, you're going to take the point and a half here with the Rams on the road.
Yeah, guys, I think we have to look at how this is going to go as a game. Here comes Anthony Richardson, who's practicing today, who's coming off a concussion. I don't think he's going to be as likely to run as he has been in the past. So now we're going to rely on his passing proficiency, which is honestly struggled. 4.94 air yards per attempt, small sample size, but that's lowest in the NFL so far. Rams stuffed Joe Mixon here, held him to 2.9 yards per carry. I think this is going to be a Rams game. It's going to be close. I think it's going to be low scoring, but I like the Rams to beat the Colts here. I don't think the Colts are going to be able to beat them with their passing, and I expect Richardson to be a little hesitant here to go on the ground coming off that concussion.
And he likes the under 46.5, Mike Randall does, FTN, Rams, Colts. Next one up, Raiders at the Chargers. Fascinating. You can go, you could talk forever about the Las Vegas Raiders and what McDaniels has done there in a year and a few. And then the Chargers the same with Staley, who got bailed out in Minnesota. You're going to take the 5.5 at the Chargers with the Raiders.
Oh, easily. Josh Jacobs, his last 3 games against the Chargers, 5.1, 5.7, 5.5 yards per carry. Are those lottery numbers? They just got sliced, the Chargers, by the corpse of Alexander Mattison, like 4.7 yards per carry. And is anyone impressed with the Chargers' defense? That's 4th worst in the NFL. Thank God for the Broncos, who knocked them up a spot after they gave up the 70 points. 7 of these last 8 between these two rivals, touchdown or less. 2 of them went to OT. Chargers just 6-8-1 against the spread as a home favorite under Brandon Staley. You know their home field advantage is minimal, and that drops to 4-8-1 as a TD or less favorite at home. I don't have confidence in the Chargers. No Mike Williams. Raiders with the points on the road for me.
Randall is on one. Mike Randall. Okay, so I want to ask you before we get to your final 2 picks. Staley, they got a defensive stop late to win in Minnesota, but what did you think about Staley going for it? 4th and 1, his own 24, up 4, just under 2 minutes to play.
Yeah, it's too much. I love the risk. I really do. And I don't like coaches who play by the book. But can we get rid of the excessive risk? I don't think we need to do that. That was too much of a move. I get that it's his philosophy. It has not been working. He cost his team a playoff spot in the end, at the end of the regular season. Of course, we saw that. This was too risky, a game they had to have, and they got it. But I just think it's going to bite them. I think Brandon Staley should worry more about the defense, which is why he came over to this team, than he should worry about going on fourth and one on his own side of the field.
One more decision I want from you. Josh McDaniels, Raiders at home, down eight, so they're down a score, plus the 2 point. It's fourth and four, 8 yard line of the Steelers. He kicks a field goal to cut it to five. Randall, what's he doing there?
It's a catastrophic decision. It was a terrible move when he did it the first time. Then he got bailed out with the penalty, and he doubled down on a terrible decision. It's a one-score game, six plus to two. It's a one-score game, and analytics show you need to know what you need to get. That is the butterfly effect, affects how you move forward. There was no reason to kick the field goal. It made no sense. They still need the touchdown. Go for it because you can get it. And then at least if you need the two-point conversion, if you don't get it, you can win it with a field goal. He needed the touchdown. It was a terrible decision. His rationale made no sense to me. Hated it.
I'm smiling, Amal and Dustin, because Mike Randall, I lived in New York City for 8 years and listened to New York sports radio. I swear to God, I feel like I'm listening to sports. He's the best. Catastrophic, terrible slobber knocker. Love it. Let's keep going, Mike. Eagles laying the eight. Here comes the Commanders. Remember, this was an interesting spot last year where the Commanders went on the road and somehow beat the Eagles. However, you're going to lay the eight with the Eagles at home against Washington.
Yeah, it was an interesting spot last year, and I think Philadelphia remembers that it's an interesting spot, and that's why I am certainly laying the points here in this matchup. Look, Sam Howell has turned into a stunt double for Terry Tate off his linebacker with the amount of times he's getting sacked. I mean, he can't get anything going there. In this matchup here, our model at FTN gives us 11.2% edge. That's a 63.6% probability willing with Philadelphia. You have Philadelphia who managed to get through that game. Players had the flu. Here comes Washington, 20 sacks in 3 weeks, 9 last week, enough. I don't think Sam Howell is actually that bad, but no quarterback can succeed back there. He has been sacked more than we're going back to David Carr territory. So I'm laying the points. It's a weird number. You want to tease it down? I have no problem with it, but I'll lay the points here per our model with Philadelphia.
Yes, the Bills sacked Sam Howell 9 freaking times. Imagine what that Eagles defensive front is going to do. We often talk about situational spots here, Mike Randall, on the show. Here's a weird one. The Titans, up-down league, they played about as badly as you can on the road at Cleveland. They come back home. Here comes the Bengals. The Bengals have a big question mark, short week at quarterback. Ergo, you're going to take the 2.5 with the home team and the Titans.
Yeah, let's go back a week ago when I was talking to you about the Cardinals. Here come the Cowboys steamrolling, look unstoppable. Arizona just gagged it in the second half to the Giants, and they come out and pull a win out. In this situation, I don't care about last week. This is Mike Vrabel at home. Titans 10-6 against the spread for Bet Labs as home underdogs with 9 outright wins. The pass rush is still getting there, 3.3 sacks per game, and I understand their pass defense is bad. Joe Burrow does not look healthy to me. There was talk of him going in the IR. I don't think they can do it on the road. He certainly didn't look great. He hit Jamar Chase a bunch of times, but they only put up the one touchdown there at home that they had to have against the Rams. Titans, underdog, plus 2.5. And Jay Marston, my friend from The Athletic, who's a beat reporter for the Bengals, said the Bengals need to score to win, that previously they were 1-26 when they don't reach 20 points under Zach Taylor. This game, 43 points, 42 points. They're dangerously around that 20-point team total. On the road, big Derrick Henry game. I'll take the Titans.
Mike, you're the best. FTN Network, make sure you check it out, not just sports betting, but fantasy as well. You can also follow Mike on Twitter, at Randall Rants. Mike, thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we bring that back in Amal. I had all the picks, so that's why it was just me running the picks. But I swear to God, boys, I have an affinity for people in the tri-state. They're so much more kind than you would believe. You constantly hear nightmare stories about people from New York. They're not. They're great. The accents are hilarious. That got me right there, Amal Shaw.
I love it. I love his breakdown, and he's right on so many of the points he raised there, and love what he talked about with this Titans team going up against the Bengals, catching points at home here.
Okay, Scott Spritzer, professional handicapper, is going to join us Some special programming, though. We're going to hit up our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA analyst, right off the top. Dame Lillard is a buck. Sharp money.